on Tuesday, September 28, 2021, and this is the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting. We are now in session, so I'm calling the meeting to order. Just to start with, morning and welcome. First time the Port Commission has been all together in maybe 19 months. I think that was the number, something like that, Eric. That we talked about this morning. It's great to convene in person again. Emergency session suspension of the Open Meetings Act requirement has ended. So the Port Commission and committee meetings must be conducted in compliance with the Act, which we're fine doing. In accordance with that, we have a quorum of the commissioners physically present today. And I, as the chairman, I'm the presiding member, and so I'm present in this room as well. However, we will continue to use WebEx for the time being to allow remote participation by members of the public, and it'll be interesting to see how this goes over time, because I actually think the WebEx helps people attend, so you don't have to drive over here and take time, you know, for in traffic and things like that. So it's likely to continue for quite a while. Before we start, I just wanted to talk a little bit about you know, everybody on the WebEx can see that we're properly spaced. Each of our commissioners have their masks, and everyone was masked up coming in. We're very thoughtful, and it's very important for us to set a good example for our teams. We continue to believe that masking is a really important part of controlling the coronavirus and the Delta variant, and so we encourage our employees and anyone who's visiting the port to please wear masks, and we will be very focused on doing that as well. I'd like to thank all the port team. I mean, talk about an amazing time in our business. I mean, we're hitting records. Roger will go through sort of these numbers here in a minute, but just an amazing amount of work is getting done here, and it's as a result of an amazing team that has come together in spite of pandemic issues, in spite of everything going on with the supply chain. They're doing a great job, and I really appreciate what all of our team members are doing at Port Houston. And that team is not just port employees, but it's the ILA employees, it's the seafarers, it's the Coast Guard, the Corps of Engineers. All of the folks in and around the port are doing an amazing job of continuing to drive our economic activity here, because we know what the Port Authority is about. It's about creating jobs and creating economic impact for our folks in the region. I'd also like to call out our IT department, who stopped a security breach before it happened in August. It was in the press here lately, and as part of a discussion in Congress. They were doing their job at the right time, and they created a lot of value for everyone here. You know, if we were in a situation where we got hacked and had to close our terminals, it would be a really bad situation, obviously. So kudos to our team, and let's you know, keep focusing on the bad guys. I'd like to update on Project 11 a bit. We continue to make tremendous progress. Our success in moving forward is being achieved through a combined and continued partnership with the Corps of Engineers. We expect to present to the Port Commission RCA for award of the first contract in October, with a notice to proceed construction before the end of the year. The first contract is for Phase 1A, which is from Bolivar Roads to Redfish Island, approximately 11 miles, but one of the most important legs, because it's the first leg. To accelerate this phase, Port Houston is directly funding all construction costs for Segment 1A. It's an estimated cost of $145 million based on the feasibility level. All costs above the $20 million that the Corps got in the federal New Start funding, so it's all costs above that $20 million. Without the ports funding those costs, we would not be starting Project 11 or Phase 1A. And I think that's really important to point out, because we're paying about $89 million more than the local sponsor responsibility. And the reason we can do that is because of the success that all of our team members do every single day, and the hard work that creating value and creating great reserves and very strong financially stout port authority to be able to do that. Dredging jobs in the U.S. and our 1A procurement effort is challenged by a limited number of dredge supplies and significant demand. Currently, we're in active negotiations with all proposers working to gain the best value, economic, and social issues to balance the final proposal that's going to balance these environmental, economic, and social issues that are the best for the entire community. Good progress has been made on all fronts, and all proposers clearly recognize the importance of properly balancing these issues. Shortly after the award of phase 1A, we expect to go out for proposals on the next phase of construction, which includes segment 1B, which is Redfish to Bayport, and section 2, which is the Bayport Channel. Staff expects to present recommendations to the commission for award of this project in early 2022. So with that, I'm really excited about where we are in Project 11. Obviously, we've made great strides completing all the steps necessary to put a dredge in the channel. Usually say shovel in the ground, but it's going to be a dredge in the channel by the end of the year, and that's really exciting for all of us. So with that, any comments from commissioners?
I have an announcement. Yesterday, we ratified a new 3-year contract for the tug service here in the port.
Awesome.
And we got a good contract. We got good faith negotiations. We hit that sweet spot where we can attract and retain qualified personnel, and the company could get a return on their investment. So we're going to be putting together some training programs, working with the pilots, and make sure we're ready to take on the future and keep these ships moving.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great.
And they're going to be up to 52 tugboats.
Awesome.
They made a major investment.
Commissioner, do you have anything?
No, I'd just like to say while we're talking about the channel and everything, that the Houston pilots, under the legislation, they were allowed to take some boats and adjust the size of the vessels. And so now we're bringing in from 1100 to 1120, I think. We've had two since they changed the rules, and I think it's going to help us in the future because the big ships are coming, whether we like it or we don't, and we better enjoy it and take advantage of it. And the pilots has done their part, and I just want to publicly thank them.
I agree with that, no question. When we went to the pilot board, and I testified for that and on behalf of industry and the Port Authority, obviously, because those 1,120-foot ships do create more value long-term, and we do need large ones. I understand the pilot commission today is having a hearing on their rate tariff request, and so that's going on at this point. So I do appreciate the pilots, and thanks for your comments.
I hope they're successful, personally.
There you go. Well, it's like any other tariff, right? You have to have a debate, and ultimately, we know that things cost more, and oftentimes no one wants to pay more, but it always costs more.
I think the key in this board, we negotiate in good faith here. Oh, yeah,
right.
We work things out.
No question about it.
Out of control. And everybody wins.
Agreed. Any other questions or comments, Commissioner? Okay. Well, let's go ahead and move to item C, which is approval of the minutes from our July 20th, 21 meeting.
So move.
Second. Any questions, comments? Okay, and we'll do all in favor say aye now.
Aye.
Everybody, instead of the no's. Okay, staff report, Director, would you, what's going on? I know a lot.
Well, there is a lot. Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. Good seeing everybody in person. Took a little bit of extra time this morning. It's been a while since we met, but, you know, there's a whole lot going on. And, again, I'm really proud of our staff and what we've been able to achieve. A lot of people are working hard as we move forward. I want to first share a few words to honor a member of our team, Raymundo Gonzalez Jr., who recently passed away after a month-long battle with COVID-19. You know, one life lost too soon is one too many, and we're extremely saddened to lose Ray Mundo. He was a much-loved family man and member of our team at Barber's Cut Maintenance for more than 15 years. He was an electrician and a friend to many, many people. And today, we just offer our prayers to his family and his loved ones and his memory before and before we carry on with our business today. I'd just like to take a few, pause for a few moments for silence in memory of a family member of the board. So a little bit more I want to talk about is some employee recognition. You know, recognize some of the people that have served this port well and continue to serve this port well. We've got some retirees as of October 1, I believe it is, Tom. Several employees. First, I want to recognize Donnie Miller. Got a slide. There we go. Donnie Miller, 44 years of service to the port and the maintenance department in many different areas. Currently, he was serving as electrician first class at Barber's Cut for many, many years. So thank you, Donnie, if you're listening, for your service and contribution to the port and all the best to you. Also, you know, a working companion of Donnie Miller is a gentleman by the name of Robert Waller, otherwise known as Rocky. He's been around for 43 years, many different areas at the port. He was the foreman for our electrical portion of the rubber tire gantry trains at Barber's Cut for many, many years. So, Rocky, if you're listening, thank you for your service, and you'll be missed as well. Also, another longtime member of the port, Maria Lewis Miller. She has retired, will retire after 32 years of service in our turning basin maintenance, taking care of our inventory parts and supplies down at the turning basin for the entire port. So, Maria, we really appreciate your service to the port as well, and best wishes to you in your retirement. And last but not least, we have a retiree, and again, we normally like to have these folks here. They were unable to come today, but anyway, still wanted to celebrate their service. Kevin Kina, been in, he's at Bayport Maintenance now, been in maintenance for a long time, served 25 years for the port, and best wishes to you, Kevin. Two more recognitions that I'd like to make. One is we like to celebrate milestone anniversaries. And today we have with us, she's here in the house, Carolyn Ashley, 40 years of service. Carolyn, thank you. You know, she's currently heading up our employee development and training. I can't name the job she's done, but she has been well-rounded, a servant for the port and for many, many years, and 40 years, what an achievement, and thank you so much for everything you've done for us, and look forward to, I don't know, we've got another dozen left in us, I think, Carolyn?
You started at a young age,
I might add. So anyway, thank you, Carolyn, so much for your work at the port. And last but not least, we have a young lady that's been with the port for 30 years she's not here with us today, but Michelle Beal has been, she's a supervisor for our gate operations, one of those unsung heroes, I like to call it, those people that interchange those 11,000 transactions in and every day to keep our trucks moving in and out of the port. Michelle's been at it for 30 years, and does a great job for us. So thank you, Michelle, if you're listening in today for your service, and appreciate everything that you do. So moving on from those employee recognition, I got a few things. I first want to talk about some environmental initiatives that we have. Following Chairman Campo's remarks about Project 11 and the balance of air and other environmental issues related to the project, it's important, I think, for the commission to know and for the public to know and be aware of some of the environmental and sustainability issues that we do have going on with respect to some of our you know, some of the port stakeholders' concerns that have been recently made public and highlighted in many different areas. These initiatives are broader than even the Project 11 issues itself. So I just want to take a moment and highlight some of the things that we've been talking about. It's been a couple of months. You know, earlier this month, as planned, we received the draft report of the goods movement emissions inventory, which updates the emissions. The data was up to 2013 before, and now it's through 2019. And just some highlights of that. The GMEI draft shows improvements in nearly every category, despite a 53% increase in TEUs and an 8% increase in tonnage. The Port of Houston Authority emissions were lower between 15% and 93% for all evaluated pollutants across the board in 2019 compared to 2013. So with all this data in hand, we'll update the Clean Air Strategy Plan as we've discussed and planned. Port-related emissions as a percent of the overall region have also gone down, but there's still work to do. For example, the harbor vessel NOx emissions were down due to equipment upgrades, yet ocean vessels are up due to more activity of vessels calling. We'll participate in initiatives. We are a founding member of Blue Sky Maritime Coalition, you know, looking at opportunities for, you know, hydrogen and other types of fuels for ships long term. The Baker Institute of Carbon Capture as well is something that we're engaged in, as well as locally with the Port Bureau, the Port Exchange, or I think it's changed names now, but it's to improve the shipping efficiencies within our channel with the opportunity to lower emissions. Also this month, we posted the Sustainability Action Plan on our website at porthouston.com. It was outlined in the July Port Commission meeting by Rich and also in the PCCAC meetings and identified 27 opportunities to lead, to partner, or support on sustainability initiatives. We've had at least a half a dozen tangible projects in discussion with respect to industry players and are soon going to have a call for projects to take further opportunities as an industry from idea to execution. Also, our government relations staff, Kenny's here today, I can tell you that we have challenged ourselves to engage in legislative strategies to benefit the Houston region and the environment through implementation of the pending infrastructure bill, which has the potential to accelerate new clean technology and alternative fuels program. I failed to mention that the EPA recognized Port Houston recently in August, in fact, as part of the Green Power Partnership for our decarbonization work and the use of renewable energy. So we met with EPA Region 6 just 2 weeks ago to further explore ways to work together on common goals. Our community relations team has recently made the rounds meeting with the recipients of the second round of grants, which I think is very valuable to our community, and to provide the checks that will produce results in the neighborhood. I think several of you were a part of those, and I think it's important for that contribution. In the last few months, we've received 9 more hybrid rubber tire gantry cranes, which reduce the emissions versus the old ones by 90% versus the prior models. To date, we've purchased 22 of these with a $60 million investment, and we are the leading deployer in the nation. I think 30 of these have been deployed in the nation, and we have 22 of them. So it's a new technology, one that significantly reduces the emissions from those machines. And the final thing on these initiatives, just getting back to Project 11 in a way, earlier this summer, the EPA also informed us that they are recommending approval for our DARE grant, an application to repower certain vessels. We can't really disclose yet, but we have gotten That they're recommending approval of this grant, which will eliminate nearly 1,000 tons of NOx, which goes a long ways toward mitigating the near-term construction activities of Project 11. There'll be more of that to come when this money is actually distributed, and we're excited about that. We can't share any more details until the notice to proceed is formalized, but the bottom line is we're doing more, our stakeholders are asking, and the port is delivering, and I'm very proud of our team for taking those initiatives. But these are just a few steps that we're taking, and I want to reiterate that the port welcomes the dialogue and action from our stakeholders. We've been open and transparent both before the pandemic and during the pandemic, and we'd hope that the social and environmental advocates can see us to continue to be an ally, not an adversary, and we invite organizations to bring the skin in the game, right? So we can work together, whether it's partnering on legislative advocacy or using their grant opportunities, things that we can leverage for the benefit of our region and advance impactful projects. So we'll continue to do better and make significant changes together, and we appreciate our partners in the environmental space. We really do, and look forward to continuing those discussions. The last thing I want to talk about, which is a lot, but I think from an operational standpoint, you may have seen the press release. Our 2021 volumes show strength as the just another record year, another record month. Our August was 29% compared to last August. It was the highest monthly total as well as far as loaded import volume. Loaded imports are just pouring into the United States, pouring into Houston, and it's just being driven, this surge is being driven by just an extraordinary consumer demand. Year to date, we've already passed the 2 million TEU mark through August, 16% increase over last year. New importers have realigned their gateways and their strategies into Houston over the years, and again, also recently with distribution center networks here, which is all good for our region and driving significant volumes. It's a 6-month streak of double-digit growth, despite the challenges that you may have heard about in the supply chain that are going on. And with the holiday season on the horizon and all of this surge in post-COVID or COVID-related consumer spending, we think it's going to shape up to remain strong through the end of the year at Barber's Cut and Bayport. In fact, I just got an email earlier from Candace Armenhoff down at Bayport that we had another record day at Barber's Cut just yesterday on gate transactions, and we did it with a 41-minute turn time. So I'm very proud of what we're continuing to do that there. We expect these elevated levels to continue, actually, from what we're hearing from the retailers through the middle of next year. So we have to adjust, right? And, all I can say, the amount of activity that we've seen really just in recent weeks and recent months is described with one word, and that's just unprecedented. I mean, it's across the nation and also here in Houston, and we continue to set records. We're seeing ships now with 5,000 lifts at both terminals, and these lift counts are just unprecedented with but it's also good, it's tremendous for the economy, for not only our region, but for our state and nation. But all this is great, but it doesn't come without challenges. And, throughout the whole global supply chain, you may have read about a lot of these challenges in other ports. You read about the 60 ships that are sitting off in the Pacific Ocean off of LA Long Beach. We're not immune to those challenges. In fact, we had just this morning, I think, Jeff, five container ships waiting to get into one of our terminals. So there's many factors that are causing this, and I don't have the time to explain everything, but I'll give you some highlights. A lot of these vessels are bunching up. I mean, the schedules are just kind of messed up from the time they leave with port closings over in Asia. So For example, we get ships in general every week on a certain service. We may not see one for 2 or 3 weeks, and then we get 3 or 4 at a time. You know, the bunching of those vessels causes a lot of challenges, forces some ships to wait outside. Also, a big issue is the amount of time that we call dwell, the amount of time that the containers stay on terminal. You go back in recent time, historically, for many, many years, the average dwell time on import containers 3.5 days. Now it's more than 7 days. It doesn't sound a whole lot, but it's arithmetic. If those containers, on average, are sitting there twice as long, twice as much acreage to handle those. They're not moving. They're not moving because they're coming off the ship faster than they're going out the gate. And they're not going out the gate because they're limited on, for just the ease of understanding, they're limited on where they can go and on the means of which to get there. The distribution centers are full. I mean, COVID's had an impact on labor. They can't take any more containers. The trucks don't have the chassis, the trailers to put them on because they're all sitting on loads at the distribution center. So they can't pick up the container to take it to these facilities. You know, and even on the export, our loaded dwell on export used to be, 3 or 4 days. Now it's up to many as 8 to 10 days on export. So that inefficiency and reduction in velocity of those containers through our terminal are causing hardships across the supply chain, not just in Houston, but everywhere else. COVID continues to be a challenge on labor, you know, with all of the man hours and the ships, but not only that, the things that we're doing to move things around to make space because the containers aren't leaving are causing a lot of hours to be spent. And quite frankly, not just on longshore labor, but warehouse labor and trucking, it's exhausting the supply of labor that we have in our region, which is also being a constraint in the supply chain. But we're working closely with labor. We've established a way to the labor and the stevedores have worked together to limit the gangs to get a more consistent arrival and supply of labor. We're putting 12 gangs on in the day and 12 gangs on at night to make sure that we're not just burning out all the labor that we have and providing a consistent and reliable pattern for ships to be worked rather than just working them all and then not having any for the next day. So a lot of things that we're trying, working in conjunction with labor and the stevedores to make this better. I mentioned the last lack of chassis. It's hard to believe, but chassis availability, if a container doesn't have a chassis or a trailer to go on, it's going to sit. And there's been truckers saying that they could use 400 to 600 chassis today to do their business, and they're just not available. Trucking community's challenged as well. So there's a lot of things going on. So what are we doing about it? And we do work daily with all of the users of our facilities. We just 2 weeks ago, we called a summit meeting. I call it a summit meeting. We talked with the ocean carriers, the importers, the exporters, the chassis providers, the trucking community, the stevedores, labor, and said, hey, we're all in this together. We've got some issues. We've got to identify what the opportunities are and seek solutions. And we'll continue to do that. There's no magic dust at this point that's going to solve this. But if we don't keep collectively, you know, I call it, we've got to keep chopping wood, right? We've got to keep looking for these opportunities. The things that we're doing, we move a bunch of boxes around at night. We've taken the rail ramp at Barber Scud, which was empty, and I think we put, 8 pads of containers down there, 10 pads of containers down there just because the containers are sitting there too long. We move all those at our expense just to make room for more containers to come in. We've tried extended gate hours. That puts an enormous impact on our labor, from our logistics associates to our labor. We've tried it, you know, to extend hours. The truckers have issues with their hours of service that they're able to do every week. And but we've tried those things. It wasn't very much, very well utilized, so we've done a lot of different things. Also, to work with labor to get more RTG trains. We've been very successful to get more RTG operators certified, so we'd have that labor to move our boxes. So we've done a lot of things to maximize what we can do on terminal. Our truck turn times have stabilized somewhat, but, you know, just the near-term issues, the long-term issues are out there. We need to accelerate our capital investments, which we're planning to do, even more aggressively than we've already done, to make sure that we have the room for, I think, volume that's going to continue to stay here and grow in Houston. So we're trying to stay ahead of the curve. Now, lastly, if you look outside this window, if they weren't closed, you'll see a site that I've never seen in my career here at Port Houston. We've got a general cargo break bulk ship at every single dock, and we've got three, I think, waiting outside still.
We caught up last night.
They're all full, but never have we had a ship at every dock, and ships outside waiting to get into the general cargo facility. I think we had like 17, 18 longshore gangs working down here just last week one day. So this unprecedented volume is not only affecting the container trade. Our traditional steel business is starting to go back up. You'll see a lot of pipe out on the dock. And many commodities that normally go into a container are showing up on break bulk ships, whether in a container or as break bulk. For instance, drive down this road, you'll see stacks of lumber, import cement for all the projects that are going on in and around the area. Pipe, pencil material, aluminum, all these things that is unprecedented as well. And I think I heard we're going to work 4,000 containers, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's more containers that have been imported through a general cargo facility than in 1 month than that's happened in the last 2 years. So it's a paradigm shift of what's going on, and it's some challenges that we have to continue to address. And we think it's going to continue on at least through the end of this year. And I can tell you, we've got a lot of great people who are, you know, spending every waking moment trying to figure out how we continue to be that gateway without congestion, to continue to move cargo through this port and get through this crisis. And, you know, at the same time, we got Project 11 going on, right? We're preparing for 2 or 3 years from now when we get these new Panamax ships coming through. So I know it's a lot, but I think it's important. We read about it, we hear about it on the news, and there's reasons why this is happening, but it's just not because of the port, but we're a big part of it, and we have to continue to be the leader to try to provide solutions with all of our users to make sure we get through this. I'll shut up. I know it's kind of lengthy, but I think it's important to understand why we're hearing on the news a lot of these things that are going on and the why, but I can assure you it's a priority for us along with many different things. So anyway, I'll end there, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's let Clyde go first.
Sure. Go ahead. So, Roger, you haven't been here long enough to see a ship at every dock.
Right.
But in the 1960s, it was that way every single day before the container movement hit.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just want to let you know that the ILA has been bringing labor in from every place we can. Brownsville, Texas, we got about 50 guys from Brownsville working every week. We got them from Galveston. And the most impressive thing we brought, because of the pandemic, we weren't able to train our crane operators for the ships, the ship cranes. So we lost a year of training. So we started running short. We brought in qualified crane operators to help us out of this problem. From Jacksonville, Florida, we got three
We brought two from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and they're operating in this port, helping us get through this shortage, this time.
That's awesome. Commissioner?
Winston Churchill said, perfection is the enemy of progress. Everything I'm hearing is progress. Are we perfect? No. But we're heading full steam ahead in that direction, and I'm excited. I really appreciate the job y'all are doing. And on the environmental front, Clyde, remember back in the 60s and 70s, how dirty it was around here? I mean,
it's changed.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
And I know we're all concerned about the environment, and we're doing everything we can to improve it. And I think we will, but it is so much better than it used to be.
Yes.
And the water and the air. And I'll be glad when the day comes when it's the way it should be. And I think we're working in that direction. And I appreciate the job y'all are doing. And thank you.
I'd like to also say that a lot of the pollution that the port is constantly blamed for is not our pollution. We have no control over shale and all of these plants up and down there. And until they really get real hard onto the program too, it's going to be very hard to get it down to where we want it down, even though we're getting us down to where it should be. So the industry needs to be spending a lot of money on their pollution too, to be sure that we stay. Roger had told me that our rents are up way high, and that's because of these chassis, they won't move them. I mean, we're making a little bit of rent, but it's killing us. We don't want that part of the money. But people are ready to pay that just to keep the cash in because they've got no place to put it. So maybe things will roll back in our direction. It's a real tough fight right now. And I appreciate what Rogers Bunch is doing in the port. We're trying every way we can. Every place is a problem right now, and that's a good thing, but it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Roger, I'd mentioned this to Roger before when the media reports came out about the environmental concerns in some of the neighborhoods along the channel. And it occurred to me reading through that there were what I think is some low-hanging fruit that might be helpful to some of the communities. There was comment in one of the articles regarding that we only mow our spoil areas quarterly. And I would like for somebody in the administration to look at, can we accelerate that schedule and maybe go to at least a bi-monthly or something like that to assist communities in visual blight. We understand that there's only so much you can do in spoil areas, but still these folks deserve to have weedy overgrown areas in their communities, and there are some of our spoil areas that are in the middle of some of these smaller communities. So I would like for us as a port to look at maybe investing some money in accelerating the schedule, just keeping those areas as clean as we can. I'd also like for us to look at perhaps emphasizing on some of our either employee environmental days or cleanup days in helping some of these neighborhoods with their cleanup projects, making the neighborhoods look better. There were some comment about the port sponsoring more air monitoring stations, and I'm really not sure that that's our area of expertise or that we should tread on the EPA and TSEC on those items. I think that we should do our best to offer sites to locate perhaps air monitoring where we can, understanding that most of the sites in these communities are private property that we have no control over. But I know that we do cooperate with TSEC and with EPA on air monitoring, and I would certainly like for us to consider doing that and offering any additional assistance that we could. Finally, with regard to the rubber tire gantry cranes and the hybrids, I'm very glad to hear that we are investing and are the leading port in the country investing in the hybrids on the rubber tire gantry cranes. I would like for us, Roger, I'm assuming we do this already. I went on a tour with a group September 1st down to Bayport, and it was very noticeable that some of the rubber tire gantry cranes, I'm assuming they're diesel powered, were really putting out some exhaust, some black exhaust. So I would hope, I don't know if it's an age thing on the cranes, but I would hope that in our program of replacing them, that we're really targeting the cranes that specifically are inefficient and that are putting clearly stuff out in the atmosphere. Again, I don't know if it's an age thing, so you could go strictly by the age of the crane, but on the other hand, a lot of them seem to be pretty clean burning, but there were at least two that were pretty noticeable just to the naked eye as to smoke they were putting out. So I am very gratified to hear that we are well on the way to replacing those with clean burning and much cleaner RTG cranes. But I hope that we look at the specific bad actors that we have and get them weeded out as soon as we feasibly can.
Well, how many RTGs do we have?
So 100.
Over
100? Yeah, 100. Huh?
We have 116.
116 with the new ones, yeah.
Right. So 22 that are hybrid and 116.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, there may, you know, certainly in the replacement of some of the older ones, maybe opportunities to retrofit. I don't know. I'm asking about this. But, you know, good problems on the table, you know, issues on the table. And I think that's something that we've been very aggressive on lately. Some of the things that you mentioned, Commissioner, you know, through the sustainability action team, you know, some of these things are low-hanging fruit. Yes, air monitoring is something that we've supported initiatives by the community, supported TCEQ, I believe, doing that air monitoring. I think those are low-hanging fruit. Obviously, community outreach, you know, anytime, yeah, I think a lot of these things, if not all, but many, you know, we're mowing areas that don't belong to us, but we need to, you know, we need to be aware of that as a community member as well. So, yes, I think the strength of this is being engaged. There are projects, you know, that we lead on. There's others that we support and others that we contribute on, and I think having this project, they're not all ours to do, as Commissioner Mee said. I mean, but you know, as a community, I think that the leadership that we have in identifying these projects across the whole industry with our NGOs and academia and a lot of others that were on the right track to identify measures to do and how we can contribute to the betterment of the whole Houston Ship Channel, even though it's not our facility. So we're in agreement.
Can those cranes be repowered?
They can. It's without going into a lot of details, yeah, it's a different technology or whatever. But some of the, you know, in general, some of the, and I don't know this offhand, but we have a program where cranes get older, we replace those. And so there may be retrofit opportunities. I don't know. Our group's looking into it.
Any other questions or comments? I'll just make one last one. So just in terms of when you think about this team effort that we have, not just the port, but the labor, the truckers, the everybody that's in the supply chain, right? So what it really gets to ultimately is all this is impeding business, right? It's slowing business down. I want to give you just a really simple and small example. So my daughter and my daughter-in-law started a small business, and they're importing. They tried to get American-made stuff for what they're doing, and they couldn't get it. So they're importing. And I keep getting asked by her, why is my stuff not getting here? And so my daughter's asked me why we can't get things through the Port of Houston. I explained the supply chain issues as Roger did so eloquently here. And she told me something last night, which just struck me like, wow. And that is that it costs more for her to ship her products to Houston than it does to make the product.
Mm-hmm.
So it costs her more to ship than it does. She pays for the product, and it's more to ship the product. And it's about 20% more than her product is worth to ship it today. And we know that shipping costs are up 5 to 10 times as a result of all these supply chain things. And that's going to that's hurting small business, obviously. It's hurting business in general because she has to raise prices, and ultimately consumers have to pay that price. And so what we're doing to solve this issue with all of our partners is really important for those small businesses, ultimately, right? And that's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, is getting people their products, you know, at a decent price. Okay, so let's move on to item E, which is appearances and public comments. And so the first speaker we're going to have today is one of our really treasured partners, which would be Captain Jason Smith of U.S. Coast Guard. He is captain of the port, and many of you who have heard me speak at a few events here recently, we talk about our partnership with the federal government, and it's with the Coast Guard for sure, and our support position with the Coast Guard, and Captain Smith is the captain of the port, and then our other really important partnership with federal government, which is the Corps of Engineers. And so together as a team, I think we're doing a really good job, and the teams are communicating all the time to make sure that the port is safe and that we're moving forward in the future. So, Captain Smith, and second time that I've got to meet him in person after 18 months of video. So
that's right.
Great to have you here.
Just last week as well. Chairman Campos and commissioners, Mr. Gunther, and to all the port staff, as well as visitors who are here today, thank you very much for having me here. I've been in the position, as Mr. Campos had said, for over a year now, and unfortunately haven't had a chance to meet you all face-to-face, but I have a lot to certainly be thankful for being here for a year and a half. No question, the growth of the port and the unprecedented growth is something to be thankful for, but that the growth and all the activity in the port is done so to keep our waterways safe, secure, and clean, and that's why we're all here today. I do have a few things to mention, but we talked about, Ms. Campos mentioned the word partnership. The most important thing that I'm thankful for is the partnerships that we share, with the port, but also with the maritime industry, with our state, local, and federal partners as well. So thank you for letting me be here. I've got three comments that I want to make, but first I want to say that in addition to the day-to-day interactions that we have with the port, and that is in all the many missions that we support, from ACE navigation to vessel traffic service, to vessel inspections and facility inspections, to pollution response, port security, and there's many, many more there. But I do want to thank you and the port, the Port Authority, for all the support and making sure we can do that safely and securely and clean. But there are three initiatives that we've taken on since I've been in the position that I wanted to highlight and give special thanks for. First, I want to thank Ms. Jackie Young for her work with the Port of Houston's Partnerships in Maritime Education. She has helped us, the Coast Guard, form a very strong relationship with the 7 maritime high schools in the area, and that is unique to this area. I mean, I've been in about 8 different ports around the country, and never seen that level of engagement from a port community to the local local schools. These maritime high schools service over 1,000 maritime students alone, and we are using some of our 1,400 Coast Guard women and men in the area to get out and volunteer with those students, specifically supporting with maritime lessons, with mentoring and tutoring as well. We are really excited, and in November 11th, we have our Commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Carl Schultz, and our new Vice Commandant, Admiral Linda Fagan, coming to Houston, and they want to see, they've heard over the last 6 months the efforts that we've made with our maritime high school. They want to meet with these students. We're going to have a day-long assembly, or at least a half-day-long assembly. Mr. Gunther is going to be there to give some opening remarks. Our Commandant's going to be speaking as well. And then following that, that's going to be with all the maritime high school students, so we can fit into one of the auditoriums. I understand there'll be about 600 students there. Following that, we'll have a bunch of our Coast Guard assets out on their field so the students can see what the Coast Guard does and what our role is in the maritime community, because they are the future of the maritime industry. I also want to thank Captain Marcus Woodring and Port's legal staff, Eric. Thank you very much for drafting a memorandum of understanding that we're very close to signing to provide a dedicated safe shelter for fishing vessels and other small vessels during heavy weather events. This is something that the port has been offering for a long time, well before I got here, but this memorandum of understanding is able to formalize the Coast Guard's involvement in this and certainly provide additional support to the port with regards to that. And finally, I'd like to recognize someone else in the room. A lot of times, a lot of the things that we do, we can open the window and see, and it's very apparent, but certainly cybersecurity is not something that we can see on a day-to-day basis. And I want to recognize Mr. Chris Wolski. I know we asked him to come up here today. I think he thought we had some questions for him, but I actually have an award for him. So, Chris, if you could come up. Chris has been an active member on our Erie Maritime Security Cybersecurity Subcommittee. That's not only a local player, it's also a regional player that covers all of Texas and parts of Louisiana. And Chris, your reputation precedes you, so I really appreciate everything that you've done. So without going off my notes anymore, the award certainly says it all. So this award is a certificate of merit to Mr. Christopher Wolski. Mr. Christopher Wolski is awarded the United States Coast Guard Meritorious Public Service Commendation for his outstanding commitment to maritime safety, security, and environmental protection in his capacity as Director for Information Security Officer for the Port of Houston from August 2021 to October 2021. I know you've done the job a lot longer than that, but this is recognizing this particular achievement. Relying on his extensive experience in a number of personnel on the port team and his knowledge of information technology systems for maritime facilities, he has been a strong advocate to improve the port's response to cyber incidences. Mr. Wolski has been and continues to be an active member of Sector Houston Galveston Cybersecurity Subcommittee, helping to strengthen the maritime community's ability to prepare for and respond to adverse cyber incidences, including suspicious activities, breaches of security, and identification of cyber vulnerabilities. Mr. Wolski's willingness to share best practices and lessons learned on how to prevent these incidences has been helpful to the Department of Homeland Security cyber operations. Mr. Wolski's transparency has led to a strong partnership with the Coast Guard, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Customs and Border Protection, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. During this time, he has communicated critical information on the importance of a strong cyber security action plan and maximized use of both Coast Guard and FBI national cyber threat hunting teams, which allowed these national teams to test their cyber threat detection and eradication capabilities. His care for the overall cyber posture of the port of the Sector Houston Galveston area responsibility have advanced our collective ability to prevent cybersecurity incidences. Furthermore, his collaborative approach to cybersecurity will help agencies efficiently respond to future cyber attacks across the entire country and will effectively minimize harm to all our nation's ports and waterways. Mr. Wolski is an example of the extraordinary commitment to protecting the maritime transportation system. His outstanding leadership and dedication and service to the maritime industry and the public are heartily commended and are in keeping with the high traditions of the U.S. Coast Guard.
Can we get you guys to come up here?
Okay,
that would be even more impressive, I think.
Do you mind joining this picture as well? Please.
I think you can probably take your mask off for this picture.
Okay. Oh.
Thank you, Captain Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's all that I have. So,
any questions, commissioners?
Nope.
Commissioners, any?
I'd say I'm glad to see you getting involved in maritime training and recruiting, and we'd like to work with you on that. So,
great. Well, I appreciate all the support so far. We've got a lot of things. There is the possibility. I don't want to commit us to anything more than we can right now, but there's a possibility of getting one of the Coast Guard's first JROTC programs here in Houston. I think with the diversity that he offers, with the maritime programs that are already in place, and with us being one of the largest cities in the country, this is the place for it.
Great.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's go to a public comment. We have three speakers, I think. Is that correct? That's it? Okay, great. So the first speaker is Elena Nasser with the Environmental Defense Fund. So go ahead and I think we have you on WebEx here. So.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
We're overcoming these technology challenges. Good morning, Port Commissioners. I go by Elu Nasser. I'm with the Environmental Defense Fund. I appreciate the chance to speak. As has been already mentioned this morning, the Houston Chronicle recently published some articles that were critical of the air pollution that's emerging from Port Houston, and more specifically about Project 11. And this media attention really highlights the need for Port Commissioners to recognize the serious impacts that are occurring on surrounding communities' health and well-being. I personally was dismayed by some of the comments from port staff in those articles. Specifically, you know, residents are sharing their health and well-being impacts by breathing polluted air, and the comments from port staff are really focused around being a good neighbor by mowing levees and picking up trash on your side of the street. And I feel like this highlights the disconnect that continues between port management team and the local community. So without bold action on environmental programs, you should expect media coverage like this to continue. We at EDF are very committed to working closely with port staff on programs, but the half measures that we've seen thus far are not adequate. So just for example, we've learned that contractors bidding on Project 11 can receive a higher score if they use cleaner equipment. But since TURC can pay 100% of these costs, the use of cleaner equipment should be mandatory, not voluntary, especially since Project 11's emissions are greater than that of ExxonMobil's Baytown plant, for example. The Clean Air Strategy Plan, the Sustainability Action Team processes, they're a step in the right direction, but they both ignore Project 11, and they demonstrate that Port Houston is not ready yet to seriously compete for that $17 billion of port infrastructure funds that are currently hopefully moving through Congress. We want to partner with Port Houston in obtaining your share of that money. However, being eligible requires Port Houston to think radically different about your air quality responsibilities and environmental justice impacts. Specifically, the Biden administration will require an assessment of racial equity, environmental justice, and climate impacts, and they're going to have to include both on and off port property to be eligible for those funds. So while it's clear that, you know, Port Houston is a huge economic contributor to the region, your willingness to claim those benefits are also need to be balanced out by a willingness to acknowledge and claim accountability for the regional admissions, both again on and off the port terminal. So in summary, Port Commissioners, you should be requiring programs that mitigate all emissions from Project 11. That would be a clear start to building trust and being a good neighbor. Take responsibility for the port-related emissions and community impacts, both on and off terminal, and ensure that Port Houston is able to compete for those $17 billion in infrastructure funds by fully addressing racial equity, environmental justice, and climate impacts. So we at EDF remain committed to work with you and discuss sustainable solutions for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay, great. Thank you for that. Discussion. And the next speaker is Stephanie Thomas of the Public Citizen. So, Stephanie, you have the floor. Hopefully, technology will work.
Good morning.
I hear you.
Good
morning.
Oh, wonderful. Morning. Wonderful. Good morning, Commissioners. And thank you for the updates and conversation around sustainability. So, as Ms. Nasser mentioned, the article in the Houston Chronicle. One of the things that had been mentioned in there was a report, and I have gone ahead and shared that report with Trey Campbell, so Trey has had a chance to see it. But basically, how that report came about was we wanted to better understand the impacts of construction-related emissions on the health of the communities near the Houston Ship Channel, as well as ascribe some monetary value to those to the emissions, so that we could really, really understand the value that can be provided when emissions are mitigated from Project 11. And the research study that I'm referencing to, and I'm happy to share this with all the commissioners Mr. Gunther as well. We commissioned the study by HARC, the Houston Advanced Research Center, who worked with Texas A&M on this study. So air quality modeling experts, they modeled the emissions and the distribution throughout the local region. They looked at the pollution, the health impacts, and the costs. And what they found is that in a worst case scenario where the dirtiest equipment is used, that it could have health costs of up to $115 million in our region. So this is certainly, you know, important and serious in terms of the cost to our community, which is why we are here to ask you to really seriously consider mitigating emissions, really mandating that contractors use clean equipment, because it has an incredible value to our Ship Channel communities and our surrounding counties, even in terms of the health benefits that can be provided. Thank you so much for your attention today.
I appreciate your comments, and I would like to get a copy of that research report sent around to commissioners. That'd be great. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay. All right, our next speaker is Reverend James Caldwell of the Coalition of Community Organizations. Reverend Caldwell, are you good technology? Maybe.
Yes, I am here.
There you go.
I'm dealing with some changes. Good morning, Commissioner Nall, and forgive me. I am driving and addressing some issues here with DPS, but we'll get that resolved. But no, I do.
Be careful.
Yeah. Well, it's renewal. It's just renewal.
Okay. Good.
But I want to thank the chair as well as the commissioners. As I stated, my name is Reverend James Caldwell, and I represent the Coalition of the Community Organizations. And today I'm here to talk about the need for clean air in our communities. I've heard a portion of the discussion this morning, but when we look at the statistics, we learn that communities near the Ship Channel face big health impact. According to EPA's EJ screen, Environmental Justice Toolkit, communities like Pleasantville and Magnolia Park fall into the 90 to 95% percentile of all communities in the United States in terms of their exposure to diesel pollution. According to the National Air Toxic Assessment, NADA, our communities suffer with some of the highest risk of cancer. They're in the 90 to 95 to 100% percentile, and in the 80 to 90% percentile for NADA. These communities also rank high in terms of their proximity to traffic, which is one of the sources of pollution that they have to contend with. A few years ago, the Health Port Communities Coalition surveyed our members, and identified the following health problems. Number one, 27% of adult respondents in the Ship Channel said they were diagnosed with some form of asthma or another respiratory disease. 6% of adults respondents in the Ship Channel said they were diagnosed with cancer. Another 7% of residents have a family member in the household other than themselves with cancer. And 21% of respondents have a family member in the household with asthma. And another 19% of respondents have at least one child that has asthma. And I'm just basically here today to ask for the port to prioritize clean air in your contracts for Project 11 and for other future contracts too. I say the health of our communities really depends on it. So I thank thank you for your time this morning and the opportunity once again to speak to the commission.
Well, thank you, Reverend Caldwell. And would you circulate that study to the commissioners as well, I requested the previous speaker to do as well, to Roger, to make sure that happens. Okay, great. Any commissioners, any questions, comments? Okay. Thank you. Any other public comment? We're good? Okay, good. Okay, so we're going to move on to the other business now on F executive. But before we do that, I just wanted to mention one thing that I thought was kind of interesting. This is Commissioner Friseau's first in-person meeting where everybody got to see her in person.
Right.
Even though we've been in a lot of meetings and a lot of discussions, a lot of committee meetings and what have you. So I just wanted to give her a shout out and welcome
thank you
to an in-person meeting. So thank you. Okay, Tom, you want to start this process or?
Sure, under executive, I'd like to present F2, which is to approve the audit committee charter, internal audit charter and internal audit policy revisions that were approved at the July 27th audit committee meeting. There's no real substantiative changes. It's more just to maintain the regulatory that are made in the audit world. So I would ask the commission to approve items F1 and F2.
So moved.
Second.
I recluse myself off F1 and I vote for F2.
Okay. So any other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And then please note that Commissioner Meese is abstaining from. Okay.
Roger. Yeah, Chairman and Commissioners, we as you can see, we've added another division. We have another section in the agenda for business equity. And although we don't have any items under business equity, I would like to just take this quick opportunity in person to introduce to y'all, everyone, the new Chief Business Equity Officer, Maxine Buckles, and just ask her to give us a minute or two of what's going on as far as our initiatives in business equity real quick. So thank you, Maxine, for taking this honor, and thanks for your leadership.
Thank you, Roger, and thank you for your confidence in trusting me with leading this division. Commissioners, Chairman, just want to take a quick moment to acknowledge the Business Equity Department. I joined about 30 days ago, but before that, there was a whole lot of work that went on and transpired. So shout out to Gilda and her team, as well as the cross-functional business equity team. And that held participants from really every division. Notably legal, which we now include a comprehensive business equity language in all of our contracts. Since July 1, we've been including those in our contracts, which includes vendor reporting requirements. So that was a missing element of what we had before. Since inception, the small business participation, we've had a strong program. You know that roughly 37% since a program was started about 20 years ago. But year to date this year, we had about 112 million contracts that were eligible for small business participation. Of those, 30 million were small businesses, and that's about a 29% ratio. So although the new business equity program wasn't in place, I asked the team to go back and look at the numbers for small business. So of the 112 million that were eligible for small business, 30 million rather, were small businesses. Of that 39, 8.5 were MWBEs. So had we had the program in place then at January 1, our participation rate for MWBEs would have been 7.5%. So we don't count those or get credit for those, but it's good to know kind of where we're starting. So from July 1, that'll be a benchmark at least that we can measure against. Some of the major contracts that were in that number, that 8.5 million, were the construction of Ward 6 at Bayport. So that held about 6.8% MWB participation. And the rehab of Container Yard 3 North at Barber's Cut. that was a $2 million MWB participation of 14.5%. So significant participation, even though we weren't really measuring it back then. As of this week, we have 1,300 participants that are registered in our business equity program, and about 58% or 783 are MWBE. So we've got some significant numbers there. One of the, or two of the contracts that were awarded since, or will be awarded since July 1, Siebert Williams Shank and Company, that's an MWBE firm, that's going to be the lead underwriter for our bond issuance. So that was notable. And they are a 92% MWBE firm. And on today's agenda, you have a MWBE firm under RCA N2, which is an IT storage equipment purchase. Zenex is 100% MWBE firm. So those numbers are significant. Also this week, Opportunity University, which is the revamped core university program. Week one of the 10-week program will begin. So that will assist with small businesses in doing business with the core. Lots of outreach activities. I won't go into those, but I'll mention just a couple. Women in Construction Summit introduced the Port Houston Capital Project. We started trying to forecast the small business or MWB participation opportunities. So that was a start in publicizing that. Chairman Campo participated in the 8th Asian Chamber of Commerce. I attended that event, and that was a well-attended event. I think it was a sold-out event, actually. The Economic Alliance Gulf Coast Industry Conference participation by Chairman Campo as a speaker. Lots of other activities scheduled for October. The next Business Equity Committee meeting is scheduled for October 19th, I believe, at 10. So that's on the agenda. So now I'll change over to that the business equity team is the outward facing I internally we have also an internally focused team, a DE&I action team, which is comprised of several team members as well, and they're cross functional. Jessica and Carolyn, you met Carolyn earlier, have kind of carried the water for that team up to date this time. IMC Culture, the firm that was hired to do that analysis, has completed phase one of their work. So all of the one-on-one meetings with the commissioners that were chosen to have those one-on-ones have been held. All of the one-on-ones with the leadership have occurred. Data request submissions have been given to the team or to the consultant for analysis. And we've established four groups of 10 employee focuses so that they will be providing input to the consultant as well. And then there are two teams in the community and education focuses that were established also. They will be meeting in October. So we'll have more information once those results are shared with us. And I believe Jessica will probably provide an update to you guys on the Great Place to Work survey, but that was executed and completed. And we had good participation in that survey. So I think that's my 2 minutes. Maybe a bit longer.
Commissioners, any questions?
I just want to make sure at each update on, it was good to see out of 1,300 registered 58% MWBE, but we'll get updates on not only percentage of number of contracts that are MWBE, but percentage of dollars as well.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Are these new employees or reassigned employees?
I'm sorry.
In this department that we've created?
Yes.
Is that new employees or employees to be hired, or is that in the transferred employees that we had that we're moving into that department?
A combination of both.
So there will be some new hires?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I believe we've already hired 3 new hires in business equity, and then there's one that's still under consideration that will be on the DE&I side. So yes, sir, combination.
I think that's important so that we don't lose any momentum with our small business activity as well, because we're doing both, right? We're going to continue to focus on small business, but also MWB as well, so you really do need additional manpower to do that, or woman power, personnel.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, let's go then to H, commercial.
Commercial, I do have to remember that we changed all the water, so change my.
I'll just say commercial.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the letter.
So, under commercial, we have a number of lease amendments, just extensions of current leases. I'd like to discuss H2, which is the approval amendment to the current lease for TPC Group to add approximately 1.5 acres to their current 5.5 acres. Doesn't sound like a big change, but this is the one that previously the commission approved the land exchange with Houston Refinery so that TPC could put in a new breakwater and expand the turning basin so that their wharf could be expanded. We do a great amount of business with them. Their dock had to be repaired because the ship ran into it a couple years ago. So this is all part of a big project that's been going on for a few years that is very important to the movement of cargo in that area. So I ask the commission to approve items H1 through H5.
Motion. Second.
Commissioners, any questions about these items?
On two, when that did we get any money back from the ship that hit that port down there, hit the dock?
Yes, there was a damage claim and a lawsuit and all that, but it went basically to them because it's their dock.
It's not our dock.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, hearing none, favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Finance.
Under finance, we have four items, and the first one is to approve a three-year contract to AMCO Consulting to provide investment consulting services for the port's restated retirement plan or pension plan, the defined contribution 401A plan, the OPEB plan, and the deferred compensation 457 plan. Again, they are the investment consulting services. They help us along with the I2 is to approve adoption and execution of resolutions, agreements, and documents to give effect to a new $100 million third lien variable rate revolving note program with Truist Bank for 5 years. It also approves any related expenses associated with the program, such as rating agency fees, commitment fees, and other type of fees. F3 is to approve the revised investment policy of PHA, which was approved by the audit committee at its July 27th meeting. Again, no real changes, more tweaks to keep us in compliance with the Texas Public Funds Investment Act. And finally, to Commissioner Meese's question, F4 is to approve an increase in the PHA budget, 2021 budget, for the establishment of the business equity division. The majority of this is for the three employees that we hired, Maxine being one of them, because her position will be refilled, so that's a headcount increase. And then a lot of training, both for internal and external. If you remember, part of this program is going to be using outside engineers and contractors to help us with the training of the MWBEs. So there is some cost to that. The full year 2022 budget for business equity will be part of the normal November budget meeting that we have. So this is just to get us through the end of the year. And again, majority of it is for the three new headcount. So I ask the commission to approve items I1 through I4.
Second.
Okay, commissioners, any questions?
I just wanted to make a comment on H1. This companies have this contract since 2014, and it just struck me that 111 vendors received the application. At the end of the day, we only have four companies bid on it, and just wondering why that might be so.
We don't have a direct answer to that, but we have started to do some outreach to find out why we only got four. A lot of in the past when we have done this, we do not allow these companies to do soft or hard dollars. You know, we only want to pay a fee, and that's the only income they make off of this. And we believe that has a lot to do with why people aren't doing it, but we will find that out.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, I-1 through 4 pass. Infrastructure J.
Infrastructure J, I'd like to talk about J-2, which is approved staff recommendation to award a contract to Main Lane Industries for the construction of a dedicated right turn lane and U-turn connector at Bayport. This is for the where the freight station road comes from the south towards the terminal. We cannot afford to let vehicles turn left out of there to get on the port road going west. So we need to put this right lane turn, and then they'll make a U-turn under the overpass. That's what this project is for. J-5 is to approve staff recommendations to award a contract to Standard Constructors for the rail spur construction at Bayport. This is the continuation of the work for the contract that was suspended earlier in the year. We bid it back out, and Standard is the winner of that. It's basically a lot of dirt work to get the property ready to lay the rest of the rail down on the ground. J6 and 7, I'll kind of talk about these both together. They're both to amend professional services contracts. They're both associated with the federal grant, the $87 million federal grant we have. We had a timeline that we were working on, but the grant timeline has proven to be quicker than our process that we started was going to work. We have to have everything done in 7 years. That means all the construction, not just the design, but and there's 87 acres of property. There's three different docks that all have to be repaired. So we are speeding up the design work. That's basically what these two items are, is to speed the design work up of both the wharves and the yard. And this will, back to earlier, the record year and volumes we're having, these are the kind of areas that also come into play when we have to take chunks of 87 acres of yard out. We can't take all 87 and repave it. We just shut us down. So it's an area where we will probably do 15, 20 acres at a time just to get it done, and that's where that 7 years becomes a problem. We could shut it down, it'd be very easy, but there's no way we can shut it. J-11 is to enter into an MOU and temporary license with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for the placement of maintenance dredge material from PHA berths at Jacinto Port and CARE into the federally managed dredge material placement areas. This is standard. This is when we dredge our facilities, we put the dredge material into the placement areas. We have to pay what they call a tipping fee to the Corps. So that's what this is. Last month, or maybe the month before, we didn't have a meeting last month, you approved the same thing for the work at Barber's Cut and Bayport. So this is just these two terminals. We have two more terminals that will be coming either in October or December. The timing isn't quite yet done with the contracts. And finally, J-12 is to enter into a reimbursement agreement for pipeline relocation construction. Previously, you approved the design work of this. This is for the construction side of it, with the pipeline companies located in segment 4 of Project 11. PHA, as the local sponsor, is responsible for one half of the cost of this project, both the design and the construction. We're estimating right now that our portion will be this $45 million that's in the agenda item. We are doing this even though today we're not ready to start moving these pipelines, but there's a long lead time for these companies to go out and purchase the materials to move these pipelines. Again, we don't touch the pipelines. We're not moving them. We are just reimbursing half of the cost of it to the actual pipeline companies. So, therefore, I ask the commission to approve items J1 through J22.
In Project 11, on number 11, that's because that's federal law that we pay for half of. Is that not right?
Number 12, correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We're required to do that.
I'll move. Be adopted.
Second.
Okay, any questions about any of the items, commissioners?
I have just a question or observation on 2, I believe it is. To this, it struck me that the low bid one, when you look at the other companies that do this, they're not all in the same neighborhood. But to have a company come in that the $500,000, my concern would be, you know, possibly the change order at some point.
We did look at that. Staff and the evaluation did look at that. We picked this company because they showed an extensive roadway project history, and we also, when we asked for these bids, we picked change order history, and they have not been a company that historically has shown a lot of change orders in the previous project. Can't say that, you know, we can guarantee that. The other side of this is a new vendor for the port, and we're always looking for new vendors. Sometimes we get the short end, and it hurts us, the rail project being one of them. But, you know, we're trying to expand our database in terms of who has worked and will work at the port. So we try to get more bids in the future. So we believe through the documents we got and the conversations we've had, our staff is confident that this company can do this.
And this is one I was asked to come about. Could have been a perfect example. 2.6 million, 10 subs on here. And then my understanding is because this is before July 1, there's no MWBE tracking, but this would be one where in the future we would look at and consider pulling that as well.
That's correct. This one was put on the street in June, so we weren't quite there at the project level yet.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none. All in favor, say aye. J1, 2.
Aye.
Okay.
Under operations, K1 is the approved staff recommendation for a 2-year contract with North Star Industries for the repair of motors, generators, and alternators. We have over 2,000 motors and generators on our 116 RTGs and our 25 ships ashore and other pieces of equipment. So this is very important that we have a company on call to assist us with the repair of these motors. If it's a minor kind of workload, our maintenance people can do, but there's certain things that we just don't have the equipment on site to repair some of the stuff that we have to send them out. 6 is to approve staff recommendation to award 3-year contract to Calamar USA Roma Americas as a sole source for purchase of twist locks and spreader bar related parts for RTGs and ship to shore cranes. So we have 145 spreader bars and 13 overheight, and because of the manufacturer, we have to buy the repair parts from them or lose the warranty on them. So we do the work, we just buy the parts from them. I'm going to take K-10 and 11 together. These are similar in that they're both five-year extensions to one to Houston Mooring and one to Texas Mooring for the spotting of vessels at the Port of Houston Authority facilities. We used to do this service with our port police, and that required us to have people on site and multiple people because if three ships show up at the same time, we got to spot them. Well, these are our ILA boatmen, line handlers, whatever you want to call them, who are there anyway to tie the ships up. So what was it, 6 years ago? Didn't we do it a year and then 5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we decided to hire these guys because they're there anyway to also spot. So we give them the instructions on where we want the ship spotted. They spot it as well as tie it up. So it's a very efficient way of doing it. And it has worked well for us. Last year, they did over 2,000 ships that they spotted for us at our facilities. And these are the two companies that do the line handling, so that's why we have a contract with each of them, because otherwise we have to say, well, only you can do it at the port facilities, and we did not want to do that. So that's why we have a contract with both of them, and it's a contract. They get paid as they do it, so there's no just straight-up money. It's do it, they get a fee.
Once again, the ILA delivers the goods.
I was going to leave that to you. And finally, K-12 is to enter into freight handling assignment agreements for terminal services at the Turning Basin. It's something that we've been working with for the last 6 months or so to get some new verbiage into the agreement. We're ready to move forward. The freight handlers, there's only one new one, and that is Metro Ports, and the rest have been around for a while. We're happy to have Metro Ports. They're the ones that are working with Hanson Mueller at the grain elevator right here. So it's good to have another player into the market. So I ask the commission to approve K-1 through K-13.
Motion. Questions? Hearing care to say aye.
Aye.
K-1 through 13 pass. Next item.
So under people, I asked the commission to authorize the renewal of the group insurance agreements for policies except the active employee medical. That will come next month as we get more information. If you remember, we are self-insured on the medical side of it. So that will come as a different thing. This includes the Aetna Medicare Advantage program that we have for our retirees, the dental program, the vision program, the life insurance programs that we have for our employees, as well as the short and long-term disability program we have. Some of these are items that we had multi-year contracts, but the three big ones that we do every year, the Medicare, the dental and vision, just to give you an idea, we have a $95,000 decrease in premiums for those three for a year. So not too many times do you hear of insurance policies where you're getting a decrease. And that's with an increase in headcount. So it's very enjoyable that we've got a good working relationship with our vendors as well as our staff doing a great job. So I ask the commission to approve item L1.
Move we approve.
Any questions or comments?
I have a question. How long have we worked with this broker, Lockin?
Probably 5 years. Their contract is up at the end of next year. So we will bid it back out at that point.
Okay.
Lockton is the group that, if you remember, you remember this, they're the ones that really helped us through the process to move towards a self-insured medical program, which has been very successful. but we will bid it out next year, late next year.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
PSTO, I'd like to get commission to approve staff recommendation for a two-year contract to Oil Mop for hazardous material response services. This is the contract that if PHA is responsible for any kind of spill, we clean it up. If somebody, stevedore, line is responsible, it's their cost to clean it up, but sometimes it happens on our watch. So this is an on-call contract that we will use as necessary. So I ask the commission to approve items M1 through M3.
So moved.
Second. Questions? All in favor say aye.
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 Also, Commissioner Fitzgerald, we just voted on L1. Would you like to register your vote for approval on L1?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll approve it.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay. Technology.
Technology. N1 is the when we had COVID hit us and we had most of the office people work from home, we, like most other companies, were not ready for technology to send 300 people home. So we've made the decision that as we replace computers in a normal cycle that we have, we are no longer going to purchase desktops. There'll be a few for like our GIS that need massive ones, but the normal employee will now be getting a laptop, so that if we have any kind of issue like this, it's also very convenient, like weather days when something's going on and we can't get in because of ice or something, we can still have people that can work from home. So we started looking for the purchase of laptops, and we're talking hundreds of them. And Charles Thompson, our head of our IT, started having discussions with the city of Houston, who has a large contract with HP and can get it for a lot less than we can get our couple hundred. So we have an interlocal agreement with the city of Houston. So we are using that agreement to purchase these laptops through their contract with HP. So it's also already established in their MWBE program, which is that for this contract is at 7.5%, which is a guarantee. We would have done it through our normal processes through a co-op. We probably wouldn't have gotten any small business or MWBE. So this has also started us to think about possible links to other entities like Metro for the motors and generators we just talked about in the future. Look at what can we combine with some of these other governmental entities that have much larger scale contracts than we do, that we could possibly start getting some cost savings through those as well. The second one is the one that Maxine brought up earlier. It's to award the purchase order to Zenix for purchase of replacement data storage and increased redundancy equipment at Bayport. This is part of the IT issue that we had a few weeks ago. I'm probably a month now. It's been that long ago. But we need to update our data storage equipment, and that's what this is going to do. This was already on the capital program for next year, but we are moving it forward because of the need and the urgency of getting these items updated. So I ask the commission to approve items N1 through N4.
So moved.
Second. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And pass. We are now finished with that part of the agenda, so we're going to go to a recess to open meeting, recess open meeting, and continue an executive session. Eric?
It is now 10:53 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port Commission Authority of Harris County, Texas will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding Fuse Industry LLC v. Port Authority, 33 U.S.C. Section 5B and 2236, the Executive Order on Ensuring Adequate COVID Safety Protocols for Federal Contractors, and a proposed amendment to the Agreement for Legal Services with Best Best Configure LLP. Deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut Terminal and Beltway Cindy properties, and licensing miscellaneous Houston Ship Channel upland properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public employees, and security related matters. The Board Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
We're going to take a 10-minute break in between now and then. Okay, we're back in open session. Go ahead.
Commissioner Cordy?
Commissioner, I have a motion here. I move to authorize the Port Authority to settle the claims of Fused Industries LLC on the terms discussed in executive session and to authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes.
Chairman, I have a motion. I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with Best Bass and Krieger on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the.
Second.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. Any other comments or questions? Commissioner Meese, I think you had a question.
Yes, I had a question on the parks in the Center City, Glena Park, and Shore Acres. I asked to be kept up, and I've not heard anything. So I don't know that that means we've not done anything, or they just hadn't gotten out.
Well, it's been a month. Or more, we've gone out to all of those to seek out what their opportunities are for those parks. We're waiting on some more feedback. Quite frankly, some of those.
So we're working on it.
Yes.
We've got a community relations meeting next month. Do you think we'll have a report by then?
Yes.
And the second thing I wanted to visit about, I've got to where I just really mark the ones I keep losing on, and my board's getting a lot longer. About the Blackburn bill, I got word that the county was going to put $250,000 into that goofy project, and I guess we would be stuck with $250,000. And I wouldn't be surprised if you don't find the city jumping in it. And he's going to get there to the $750,000. Now that's a project that he can't do a thing with until we finish this port. It probably can't even take effect then. So it was a bad deal when we did it. It's going to be worse. But if we're committed, we're fixing to lose another $250,000. And the Corps hadn't even approved it. No one had anything to do with it. But they have approved the other ICDAC thing, and it's moving pretty rapidly. So I don't know that we can do anything about it. But I don't know.
Here's an update, Eric, on what the deal is.
So, Blackburn, Jim Blackburn has got his money commitments. It's on the county agenda today, as you mentioned, to entertain that. The city apparently is good for their $250,000. The other $250,000 is from. Apparently the money's there. We're working. Eric's working at their request on a interlocal agreement in the event that all of that is true. So you know, that was our commitment early on to contribute $250,000 as a challenge grant to if he raised the other $750,000. That's where it stands.
Eric, anything to add? Yeah, just to add, I mean, the way we've drafted it, and this is pre-negotiation, we would all contribute to the city. The city would hold it and distribute it, you know, $1 from each of us at a time, basically, if, you know, with the Speed Center contributing the fourth dollar, I mean, of every $4, literally. So that's how it's drafted. Whether it ends up being like that, we don't know, but Commissioner Meese, to your point, we would bring, since it would be an interlocal and it would be a significant change from what the original item was, Roger and I have talked about, and I think it would be most prudent to bring it back to the commission to approve it as an interlocal agreement.
That may be as early as next month.
But it, let's see. I've drafted it. I've given it to the city and the county, and we'll see what happens.
I just want to ask this really quickly. I think we talked about this a while back, but when is the next time we hear about succession planning? I think we talked about this some last year. Just thinking about kind of next wave of folks and what that looks like.
It depends on, I mean, we could talk as far as, you know, that's one of my stated goals,
right,
as executive director. We could do that in an executive session,
right,
if we wanted to do that way. But we have senior across the organization working on succession planning. So you're talking about
I think we do an executive since we're talking about
yeah.
All that.
So yeah, there's an opportunity.
Too limited.
That would be the right thing to do. Maybe we could do that in October, amongst all the other goals that are on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
For
an update on all the things. Sure, that'd be a good thing to do in October.
So good.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
We adjourn.
Great, absolutely. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And but that's a good question.